And now it's time for the Wildside News with your host, Sydney Wildsmith.
Global warming. The debate has been heating up now for years. Is there any real evidence that global warming is real? Was last year's historic hurricane season an indication of climate change or just a temporary aberration? Are you kidding? The debate is over. Global warming, it's real. Find out as we put a wrap on this one when your Voice of the Earth continues here on the Wild Side News.
Welcome back to the Wildside News. And now, Sydney Wildsmith.
I wonder what it is about the issue of global warming that has, in the United States anyways, found it on the same political stage as abortion, gay rights, and the global war on terror. The debate about global warming, or climate change as some would have it, is one of those issues that it seems to be all right to have an opinion about. Someone comes up to you and asks, "So do you think this global warming thing is real?" And then the arguments start, and generally before it's all over, people are arguing about Dick Cheney and the oil industry, or whether gays should have the right to marry. And when the debate is taken to the international stage, the topic ends up somehow being allied with enemy states, the dark and mysterious peoples of the developing world. It's strange. Talking about global warming ranks in importance to many on a par equal to predicting whether Brokeback Mountain will beat out Capote in the Oscars. And of course, here in the U.S., it gets smeared and defamed and associated with the wacky environmental nuts who obviously just want to turn us all into roaming bands of dirt-scratching, dope-smoking liberals bent on destroying business and handing it all over to the terrorists. Well, I say enough. I say you'd better listen to today's show. If you ally yourself in any way with any of those perceptions, stop. Global warming, it's real. It's happening. It's doing all the things it's supposed to. Earthly temperatures are rising. Climate change is occurring. The oceans are rising. Weather is getting more severe. Glaciers are melting. Droughts are increasing. Water is threatened. People are being displaced. It's not just talk. The facts are in. The evidence is everywhere. And because we've been playing some kind of religio-science with the facts, the truth is going to eventually override the rhetoric, and there is likely to be a very heavy price to pay. If you're still finding niggling thoughts inside your head, raising those same old worn-out rationales for denying that every living thing on this planet is heading into a new dynamic, you'd best listen to today's show, because this is your chance to come face to face with the world's leading experts on climate change. Now, I have to warn you, it's going to be a little sciencey, but I believe in science. I like to look at evidence, facts, research, analysis, expertise, and dialogue, and see what comes from it. And that's what we're going to do today here on the Wild Side News. And if you are still poo-pooing the tone and tenor of my words, you are probably harboring little thoughts that I'm somehow gloating about global warming, that I'm secretly happy that whole systems of animals and humans may end up having to fight for their existence. Nothing could be farther from the truth. I have been a warrior for the wonder, and I still am. And if you do care about people and peace and the prospect of a reasonable, much less happy future, then I stand with you to begin our new strategy for sustainability. Today, we talk with three of the world's scientists who have spent years in the field monitoring, recording, and analyzing the changes in climate. And without exception, all know that global warming is real. This is a special edition, And thanks to the Wallace Stegner Center at the University of Utah in Salt Lake City, which is holding this weekend its 11th annual symposium, I am able to bring you three of the world's leading experts on climate change. Following the news, we hear from Dr. Mark Serres, Senior Research Scientist with the Cooperative Institute for Research in Environmental Sciences, as he discusses his research focusing on changes in the Arctic regions. In our second segment, we talk with glaciologist Dr. Lonnie Thompson, Senior Research Scientist with the Byrd Polar Research Center. Amongst his many stellar accomplishments, Dr. Thompson holds the record for spending more days at an altitude above 18,000 feet than any other human. He has spent the last 26 years researching the record of climate change through thousands of years by collecting core samples of ice from glaciers that tell the truth about our current trends. Glaciers are universally disappearing. And in our third segment, we take a detailed look at our oceans and what years of research is telling us about whether global warming is real. And for many listeners who already get it, bookmark this show and use it as a tool into the future to help educate those who continue to be locked into the deep freeze of denial. So, following the news, we go in depth in this special edition of Your Voice of the Earth, as we do regularly here on the Wild Side News. So first, the news. Global warming. It's real. And that's the news. This weekend, we'll see the convergence of a powerful group of 20 scientists, authors, politicos, as they present their expertise to the public in Salt Lake City at the 11th Annual S.J. Quinney College of Law Wallace Stegner Center Symposium addressing climate change, the Arctic to the Rocky Mountains. Friday, March 3rd and Saturday, March 4th will set a standard for the current state of the arc when it comes to the topic of global warming. We are honored to be able to bring you three of the presenters from this event to give you a sense of the strength of the argument being made that global warming needs to move across the threshold of doubt and into the light of reason. We begin today's show with an interview with Dr. Mark Serres, Senior Research Scientist with the Cooperative Institute for Research in Environmental Sciences, as he discusses his research focusing on changes in the Arctic regions. He has contributed his services to the National Science Foundation, the World Climate Research Program, the United States Navy, the Arctic Research Consortium of the United States, and many, many more. In the last couple of weeks, the news has been filled with stories about Greenland, very specifically because some research is suggesting that Greenland's ice cap is melting at a rate, some say, double what it used to be, and therefore some are interpreting that as evidence of global warming. Well, as we all know, the debate continues. And so what we're going to do today, continuing our discussion, talk with people who are researching this in detail. And right now, joining us from the University of Colorado at the Cooperative Institute for Research in Environmental Sciences is Dr. Mark Serres. Welcome to the Wild Side News.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Well, let's start out, first of all, by having you give us a sense of when you think about this topic of global warming, what do you think about?
Well, it's for real at this point. It's not global warming is not the sort of thing that's going to happen sometime in the future in our grandchildren's time, but we're seeing it today. It's starting today, and the biggest changes that we're seeing right now are in the Arctic. We're really seeing some remarkable changes in that environment in terms of changes in temperature, in terms of changes in the atmosphere, the sea ice cover, and more recently we've been having a lot of changes in the Greenland ice sheet, and that's a cause for some worry.
Now, of course, some people would suggest that what we're witnessing here is just a climatic aberration. I believe that you're implying that your research is suggesting that this is a more of a long-term trend.
Yeah, it is certainly part of a long-term change that we're seeing right now. We know that the climate system exhibits a lot of what we call natural variability, of just natural variations in the system anywhere from weeks to week, months. we know this occurs, and we understand that fairly well. But what we're seeing now really is something different. We are seeing, I think, the beginning of a long-term change that's being driven, at least in part, by increasing greenhouse gases. I think the evidence for that is so strong at this point that it's really hard to argue otherwise.
Talk about your focus in terms of your research as a scientist. Give us background on what you've been researching.
Yeah, well, my research interests are really wide-ranging, but definitely have an Arctic focus. I've been interested in all aspects of the Arctic environment, from variations in the atmospheric circulation to recent changes in sea ice and in the Greenland ice sheet. So really, very much with an Arctic focus. If I had a specialty, I guess you could say it's in the Arctic sea ice cover, and that's where we've really been seeing some pronounced changes.
Well, tell us about those changes. We're constricted by an audio version here, but give us a sense of what you're literally seeing on the ground there. What sort of changes can you witness?
Yeah, well, we're really seeing, I'd say, the remarkable changes, from my point of view, is in the sea ice cover. Now, this sea ice cover is a floating ice cover. This is ice that's about 1 to 4 meters thick that covers much of the Arctic Ocean. Now, since about 1979, we've had very accurate records from satellite that can tell us how much sea ice was there. In other words, how many square miles or square kilometers of sea ice. We've seen a rather pronounced decline in the amount of sea ice that we've seen in the Arctic over this period, 1979 through the present. And it appears that these changes started around 1960. Now, if you look at 2005, 2005 was the least sea ice we've ever seen in the Arctic. If we compare what we had in September of 2005 with what average conditions ought to be, in other words, how much ice we ought to have in September, well, we've lost an area which is roughly the size of the state of Alaska or twice the size of the state of Texas. So this is really a lot of real estate that we're talking about in terms of the loss of Arctic sea ice cover.
So there's less ice. Why does that matter?
Well, it matters for a number of reasons. One is what we call feedbacks. If we look at how the Arctic behaves in the global climate system, we can think of the Arctic as being the heat sink to the system. We have the sun shining strongly on the equatorial regions. It shines much more weakly in the Arctic region, and of course there is no sunshine at all for 6 months at a time at the North Pole. And so the Arctic as a heat sink is what really drives the global circulation, in other words, the global atmospheric circulation. For example, if you have storms, just your typical mid-latitude storms, well, the job of those storms is to transport heat and moisture from the equatorial regions up into the polar regions. Well, what we're doing now is starting to fundamentally change the nature of this Arctic heat sink by getting rid of the sea ice cover, by warming it up. And since the whole system is all coupled together, the changes in the Arctic are going to be expressed as changes in weather systems elsewhere on the planet.
Well, the ice serves many different purposes. As you say, it holds literally that cold. It's a storehouse of cold energy, which
That's
is
right.
actually something like a negative energy if you kind of compare it to the warm. You know?
In a sense, yeah.
So, but it also serves other purposes. For example, ice is a very reflective surface, and snow, and water is not as reflective, and therefore absorbs more heat. So have you been able to determine the effect that a lack of ice may have in terms of a kind of general warming trend? Is there a way to factor those things in?
Yeah, well, what you're talking about is the classic feedback in the Arctic.
Mm-hmm.
And this feedback involving the sea ice and the open water, the open ocean water, is one of the primary reasons why the effects of global climate change, or whether it's one of the very reasons why global climate change will be most strongly expressed in the Arctic. Because what will happen here is that we have this sea ice cover, which is very white and very reflective. That means most of the sun's energy hits that ice, bounces right back up into space. But we're warming up the system now such that we're losing some of that sea ice, so that now more of the darker ocean areas are exposed. And so those are much darker, so that much more of the solar energy gets absorbed in the ocean. Well, this heats up the ocean, it keeps
So what we're witnessing as well is literally less ice cover and less time that the ice is covering the area. These changes also affect the living systems that rely on the unique qualities of this cycle of ice and melting. What can you tell us about that, too?
Yeah, well, that's very true. The classic example that people use and I'll use here is the case of polar bears. Everyone likes polar bears, nice, big, white, cuddly animals, although they are rather vicious at times. But in any case, these polar bears require sea ice for their survival. In other words, they hunt seals on the sea ice. They need to get out onto the sea ice to make their living. Well, by losing that sea ice, the polar bears are starting to have a hard time of it. And there are some projections out there that by the end of this century, polar bears may be extinct because they can't get out to the ice and they're going to starve. Now, it's not just animals like that. It's the people, too. If we look at native hunting practices, well, now the people who live up there, you know, can't make their living by hunting seals, things like this, because they can't get out to the sea ice because it's drawn so far back from shore. We also see things that are quite alarming, and one of these is coastal erosion. You have entire villages in areas of coastal Alaska and Siberia that are having to be evacuated because they're literally washing away. What's happened here is that you've drawn that sea ice so far back from the coast that now winds will blow over open water. They'll have a long fetch, as we say, over open water. And so you'll have lots of wave action. So you have these strong waves that can give you a lot of coastal erosion. So this is sort of another regional example of some of the changes that are occurring up there. And here's one that really directly affects the people who live there.
You know, one of the things that I'm suddenly realizing that I don't think I really realized before, and that is you're talking about sea ice. I think a lot of people, including myself, when I think about the Arctic region, really kind of focus on this concept of massive, thick ice sheets that cover whole areas. But really, we're talking about something else, which is this changing. It's a freezing over of the ocean, the surface of the ocean, that waxes and wanes throughout the seasons, and that's really what we're looking at specifically, isn't it?
Well, that's right. When we think about the Arctic snow and ice cover, we can collectively put this in a term called the cryosphere. The cryosphere is the snow and ice cover. And the major components of the Arctic are, of course, seasonal snow cover over land. That certainly waxes and wanes with the season. And also this floating ice cover. But really the polar cap of the Arctic is really the Greenland ice sheet. This is this massive ice sheet that is up to about a mile thick. It's quite an important feature because it acts as a buffer to the system. And interesting thing is, if we were to melt all of the ice on the Greenland ice sheet, that would be capable of raising sea level by about 7 meters, which is a heck of a lot. Now, we're not going to see that big change occur right away, but we do know that it does appear that the Greenland ice sheet is a lot less stable than we thought before. So there's many different components to the cryosphere. Sea ice is one, snow cover is another, but the other big one is this Greenland ice sheet sitting out there.
This is kind of a new player. I mean, people have talked about it, but suddenly it seems to be in the news because apparently recently there have been reports that suggest that ice is melting twice as fast as what was predicted.
Yeah, that's right. And this is a bit of a change in thinking, definitely a change in thinking we've seen in the past few years. Until recently, it was generally thought that the Greenland ice sheet was relatively stable. In other words, let's say we warm up the climate due to greenhouse gases, we'll start the Greenland ice sheet melting some. So you'll have meltwater that flows into the ocean. This could be a modest contribution to sea level rise, but that this would occur slowly, the melt of the Greenland ice sheet. But this doesn't seem to be the case anymore. What's happening is this. Is that for the past 20 years or so, you've seen an increased melt of this Greenland ice sheet. But what's happening is a lot of that meltwater that occurs during summer actually makes its way down to the bed of the ice sheet. And what it does is it lubricates at the very bottom the glaciers that basically drain that ice sheet. These are like big valley glaciers. So basically, this meltwater goes down, lubricates the base of these glaciers, and now these glaciers can literally start to slide much more easily into the ocean. So you're seeing what we call in some areas, galloping glaciers, glaciers that are surging very strongly. The one big one right now is Jakobshavn Glacier on the west side of Greenland, which is moving at a very rapid rate now. I forget the number, but I think it's something like 15 kilometers per year, and starting to discharge lots and lots of icebergs into the North Atlantic Ocean. And so the idea here, or the thinking here, is that through this process of this lubrication at the bottom of the ice sheet, we could really put a lot of ice into the ocean. And this is the thing that could raise sea level more rapidly than we previously thought.
Well, tell us what you're actually witnessing when you look at the Greenland ice cap, because that apparently is the real, as you say, that's where things are really being stored. What are you seeing on the ground?
Well, what you're seeing on the ground from satellite, we can get a good assessment of what's happening to the Greenland ice sheet in terms of this melt. What you're seeing is actually, interestingly, that the Greenland ice sheet right now is actually getting a little bit thicker at its higher elevation areas, but getting a little bit thinner around the edges, okay? And that thinning around the edges is largely due to this melt. But what you can really see from some of the satellite information is some of the manifestations or some of the effects of these massive glacier surges that I'm talking about, mm-hmm. like Jakobshavn Glacier. We see this very rapid flow of this glacier into the Atlantic Ocean and a very rapid retreat of the glacier front as these icebergs calve back. And this is something that really is very apparent in satellite data.
Well, now, when you say rapid in terms of glaciers, what are we talking about? They do move.
The Jakobshavn Glacier, I believe, is flowing right now at a rate of something like 10 to 15 kilometers per year.
Wow.
So that's for a glacier. That is moving right along. That is pretty darn fast.
That is fast. I had no idea it would be moving that much.
You could even watch it move, probably.
This is changing the view of possible ocean level increases. It's speeding it up.
Well, the old way of thinking is that the rate of sea level rise due to the melt of Greenland would be fairly slow. Now, right now, the global sea level is rising at somewhere in the order of a centimeter per decade, okay? Not very much. Now, most of that is actually due to what we call thermal expansion of the oceans, because the oceans are actually heating up. And it turns out that warmer water is actually a little less dense than colder water. That means that for a given pound of water, it occupies a larger volume. It's warm. But so that's the major contribution to that rise. And there's a smaller contribution from the melt of glaciers, largely from the smaller glaciers of the world, but now also being contributed by Greenland. So a fairly small rise. But the thinking now is that this could become much larger. For example, something like half a meter of sea level rise, say, in the course of several decades. And that could be rather problematic for a lot of areas in the world. Just a half a meter of sea level rise could really cause you problems in areas like coastal Florida, Chesapeake Bay. You know, a lot of these areas that are just about right at sea level, this could be a real problem.
Well, it's kind of interesting when you say like a foot and a half within several decades. Well, that translates to a foot and a half every 20 years, which over, if you multiply that times five, that's 7.5 feet over the next 100 years.
Something like that.
And so then if you start saying 10 years from now, that would be 9 inches. Every year we're going up quite a bit more than that 1 centimeter then. So the rate seems to be increasing significantly.
You could increase the rate of sea level rise by an order of magnitude anyhow. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of unknowns in this. This is something we're really just starting to come to grips with in understanding how these glaciers surge into the ocean. The science is still rather immature in this area. These recent observations just stick out like a sore thumb, and so it's got people a little bit concerned.
As well it should. I know that I heard a discussion by a representative of Lloyd's of London talking about the future of insurance in coastal areas, and that Lloyd's of London was reaching a point where they said, you need to be aware of the fact, and this was coming from a representative, that there will be a time when no one will be able to afford the insurance, and that they have to factor those sorts of considerations into their projections in terms of rates, that a point will come where they literally cannot insure coastal areas. And he's not talking about that far in the distant future here. Well, then, of course, the question becomes, so this is the trend. Some people are trying to suggest that we may have the capacity to affect this trend. Do you think that's reasonable?
Yeah, well, it's going to be hard. And the problem is there's so much inertia in how we use energy. No matter what we really do, we're going to be dependent on fossil fuels for at least the next 50 years. You can't really get around that. There's no magic bullet. But what we've got to try and do somehow as a society is to slow that rate of growth of the greenhouse emissions. And by doing that, we can, number one, buy us some time to bring new technologies online, you know, new energy sources. But also keep that warming at a slow enough rate that we can manage it. If the warming is fairly slow, this is something we can adapt to, that we can deal with. But if it becomes rather strong, and especially if we couple this with things like, you know, collapse of the Greenland ice sheet, this is the sort of thing that can cause us problems. To my mind, the name of the game is conservation. Because conservation, as I say, it will help us buy time to get new technologies online. It'll keep that growth rate slow enough that we can deal with it. But the question is, as a society, as a global society, do we have the will to change?
You know, it raises some really interesting questions. I mean, I've been involved with nature and environmental issues virtually all of my life, and I go back in my own personal history and hear of the various warnings and scientists talking about how there could be mass extinctions, and just it goes on and on. We need to change our ways, and we have to get off our dependence on oil. This was being discussed in the 60s and the 70s, and to a large extent, a lot of that went no one paid attention. And now we find ourselves in this particular situation. Scientists have kind of an interesting way of trying to be polite. it's by nature, you can't go screaming and hollering, you'll lose your respect. But as someone who has the liberty of playing with this a little bit, the amplitude is rising, the frequency is rising, and there really is a bit of a real call out there that something is happening. How serious should we be taking this? I mean, should we be responding in some time frame less than 20 or 40 years to this call?
Well, yeah, that seems to be the time window we've got, the next 20 to 40 years or so. There's a lot of very interesting work done by a colleague of mine, James Hansen, at NASA. You may have heard of him. He's been on the news lately about some of this. And the thing is, if you look at the historical, if you look at what we call the paleoclimate record, we have actually rather good information on what global temperatures were like back 600,000 years ago. We have a very long record of this, and this comes from ice core data. What we find is that there's been periods when the globe has been considerably cooler than today, say 4 to 5 degrees cooler. This is associated with the Great Ice Ages. But we find, looking at this record, that it's really never gotten a whole lot warmer than we see today. Yet during this whole period, the Earth has still looked pretty much like we see today. Certainly at times there were more ice sheets, and they were larger, and they were smaller at times. But if we were to go back 100,000 years, we would see a world that we still recognize. Well, what's happening now is we're getting very close to this point now where we're getting the temperature so high that we haven't seen this in 600,000 years. And so if we keep rising temperatures, if we keep increasing temperatures, we're going to get to a point where things could get potentially rather unstable. In other words, these strong feedbacks kick in. And the time window to try and deal with this is about 20 to 40 years, it appears. In other words, if we could flatline the carbon dioxide emissions into the atmosphere in 20 to 40 years, the rate of warming would be fairly slow and the total warming would be small enough so that we can manage it. But if we keep going on with business as usual, we're going to bring the system to a state that we haven't seen in 600,000 years. And this is kind of the 1.5, 2 degrees above today, then we could really start to see some strong problems related to things like, you know, increased surging of the Greenland ice sheet, things like that. So the time window is 20 to 40 years.
A lot of these predictions in the past, as I say, they are somewhat conservative, and so I'm going to say, well, you know, you're suggesting that we have 20 to 40 years, and just as we find that the predictions about the Greenland melt are suddenly much more significant than we thought, that window could even be shorter than that. And this would really affect us much more quickly, and perhaps some people would even suggest that some of the what appear to be serious changes in climate and storms and hurricanes and things may be a result of this. Let's talk about, and I'm not trying to scare people here, but what is a worst case scenario? What could actually happen in case somehow even these predictions are too conservative? How quickly could things change, and what could happen? Let's hope they don't, because that could be in reality what we have to face.
Well, worst case scenarios is a difficult one to pin down, but the real issue here is the surprises that may come up, things that we really don't understand and that may catch us unaware. Now, one of them certainly is this instability of the Greenland ice sheet. If the current thinking is right, you know, we have to be really careful, because maybe in even 20 years from now, we could get to that point where we're really getting massive surges of icebergs into the ocean, and so that sea level rises, of course, much more rapid than we think. One of the other things we have to be concerned about is things like hurricanes. Now, as you know, we've been having this increase in recent years in the intensity of hurricanes. We're getting these really strong ones. The question is, and this is very controversial, is this just part of natural variability, some long-term natural variability, or are the effects of greenhouse warming starting to give us more intense hurricanes? It turns out this is an extremely controversial issue. You've got very prominent scientists on one side saying, no, it's just natural variability. You've got equally prominent scientists on the other side saying that, hey, we know this natural variability in the system, but this change is different. This probably has something to do with greenhouse warming, because the idea is that we warm up the oceans, we get more evaporation, and that's what the hurricanes feed on. And we well know how destructive these systems can be from recent experience. So if this is correct, that effects of global warming are increasing the intensity of these hurricanes, well, we're in for some hard times ahead.
Here's a question. You may not have the answer to this. Hurricane Katrina really took us by surprise in many respects. I don't think, you know, we just had not been prepared for this level of storm hitting the coastal areas of the United States. Can these storms become even much larger than that? Is that possible?
Well, it's hard to say that they would become. There are upper limits on just how strong these things can be. And we talk about like a Category 5 storm. That's the most destructive. Okay? You're not going to go into a Category 6, Category 10 storm. There are sort of physical limits on how strong these things can be. But what we may be seeing is that we skew the distribution. In other words, if we have, say, 20 hurricanes in a season, a greater percentage of those are the really strong ones. And the other concern is, do the tracks of the systems change? Okay? In other words, do we see more of these hurricanes going through the Gulf of Mexico and hitting places like New Orleans? Or, for example, do we see a change in tracks so that areas like New York City, for example, start to get hit by these big ones? These are some of the unknowns.
Mm-hmm. The surprises, yeah.
The surprises that we have to be concerned about.
Is that a term you've used before? Because I think that's a good term. Yeah, I think, because I think that's really what, realistically, we need to talk about.
That's right, and if you look at Katrina, that was case in point. Clearly, we were unprepared for this. Are we better prepared today? Arguably not. But it's just a case in point that, Mother Nature can be pretty cruel sometimes. It can come up and bite you, and we don't quite understand exactly how Mother Nature works.
As you look out into the future, What is it that you're going to be watching? What are you going to be paying attention to? What are your concerns?
Well, what I'm going to really be paying attention to strongly is what's happening to that sea ice cover. Because that sea ice is really such a sensitive indicator of climate change. The Arctic is overall is sort of a bellwether of the system. It's the canary in the coal mine. That the changes are going to be most pronounced there. And so taking a look at the sea ice and what it's doing, I think is really going to give us an indication of really the direction of change and the trajectory of change. That and the Greenland ice sheet. I think the next 10 years are really going to be telling. See, what's going to happen in the past decade? And I think then even the few remaining skeptics of the whole global warming debate will have to come to heel.
Do you see a time in the future, even politically, where the world is going to reach a point where they're just going to have to address this somehow? In other words, our consumption patterns, development around the world in China and India, you know, it's a wonderful thing that people can advance and have all the pleasures of a consumerist life, but unfortunately that may not really be possible. And yet I don't know any way to turn that around.
Yeah, well, we're seeing the change already. I mean, even in the current administration, you are starting to see a grudging acknowledgement that we are having an impact on our climate and that we've got to do something about our profligate consumption of fossil fuels. So we're starting to see some change now. Now, interestingly, how that works is largely through the free market. You know, gasoline goes to $3.50 a gallon. You know, people start buying hybrids and other more fuel-efficient cars. You hate to say it, but, you know, the market is actually remarkably efficient in this way. So we are starting to see the change already. And what we need to keep is the momentum going on this. You know, no one's saying we're going to have to go back to the Stone Age and, you know, eat nuts and twigs. But certainly our behavior is going to have to change. We're going to have to become much more energy efficient on the one hand.
It is sort of like an economic natural selection process. That really is what's going on. You're absolutely right.
And we'll really have to change because if you think of the climate system, it's been sometimes referred to as sort of an ill-tempered beast. We know that it can really come and bite us. And our way of dealing with this in the past several decades has been to poke this rather wild animal with a sharp stick. And that's rather foolish. But I think we're starting to come to a realization that we really do have to change. It's slow but sure, but I think the momentum is now underway.
If you could wave that magic wand and mandate some changes, what would they be?
Well, I'm going to go on record now as being rather controversial, and I'm going to be saying that as part of our future energy mix, we have to be starting to look to nuclear again. Because think of it this way, choose your poison. We keep putting greenhouse gases to the atmosphere from fossil fuel burning. For power production, this is primarily coal. All kinds of problems, not just in terms of greenhouse gases, but other air pollution problems. All kinds of things. Well, okay, now we have nuclear, okay? Now, certainly we've had problems with that before, but there are new designs sitting right there online waiting to go. Now, there's certainly problems with what do you do with that waste, okay? How safe are these plants? But choose your poison. Which is the worst option? The problem is there is no magic bullet. All there are difficult choices. Now, maybe 50 years from now, we will get that magic bullet, which would be fusion. Okay, that's probably the holy grail in the future, but that's still probably 50 years out. So in the meantime, what do? You've got to choose your poison.
I think we have to be realistic about all options. And as you say, it really is a matter of making choices.
It is a matter of making choices, and you've got to recognize that certainly things like solar power and wind power can be very effective regional or local solutions. But the fact of the matter is we're not going to power the United States with a bunch of windmills. It's just not going to happen. We have to be realistic about the problem.
To the average Joe Bag of Donuts out there, what should he be thinking about?
It all starts at home, doesn't it? I think just a little more awareness of what we're doing to our planet. If we can just, ignorance is a terrible thing, but the one saving grace about ignorance is that it can be fought, through knowledge. So I think venues such as today, talking with you and other people I talk to, my job is to try and get the word out here, try and educate the public so that we can seriously. And the, you know, the fact of the matter is we're living on this small little blue rock somewhere out in the middle of space in the far corner of some galaxy, and it's our home, but we've got no place else to go. It's our only home.
Communication is a big part of the key. Globalization should also really include globalization of dialogue. I think about this every once in a while. I wake up and I go, I'm on this little planet. This is our little world. This is our life right here, mm-hmm. happening right now. And it's,
we've got no place else to go.
This is it. So let's get smart. Let's just get smart and real. And certainly the science that is being brought to this discussion will serve us well. Dr. Mark Serres, I want to thank you so much for lending your voice to the Wild Side News. And if people want to find out more about what you're doing and what your organization, is it Ceres?
My association is what they call Ceres, which is the Cooperative Institute for Research in Environmental Sciences. If you want to learn more about the Arctic, you can go. We have a very nice website here at the National Snow and Ice Data Center. So if you just do a web search on NSIDC, or the National Snow and Ice Data Center, you'll find all kinds of wonderful information on the Arctic and the Antarctic and the ice sheets and the glaciers and the sea ice, all kinds of wonderful stuff there, lots of wonderful pictures.
Thanks so much, Dr. Serres, for lending your voice here on the Wild Side News. Climate change, global warming, it's real. In just a moment, we turn our sights to the highest places on Earth as we follow the world's leading glaciologist as he looks back through time and into our future and the changes that climate holds in the ongoing legacy of life on planet Earth, when your Voice of the Earth continues here on the Wild Side News.